Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners and let's step into the night and to pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Everyone and welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I got some questions about this chapter. I got some questions, Marvin.
I'm excited about these questions.
And it's like super nerdy questions.
All right. I'm going to be here for it, hopefully.
I know. Oh, my goodness gracious.
So we, of course, are so excited to be back here with It's the Second Task. One of the cool things about this task is it takes place in the month of February, and we did not mean to take this long. For those of you listening to the Potterverse in real time, we did not mean for it to take this long for us to get the next episode of the Potterverse, but we do want to give you a little mea culpa,
yes.
As our family has had COVID. So,
COVID's been COVID, and Mary still, I think,
still
has COVID.
Dealing with it.
And if you can't tell, I'm a little hoarse as well. Although for the most part, I've been asymptomatic. I think our children, for the most part, have been asymptomatic, which is great.
But it's just been a doozy. It's been a doozy of a time.
So. Yeah, and there's a lot of life stuff happening for us right now. And I think we're coming to a relative close on that life stuff for the most part. I think we'll do a separate episode of, you know, on maybe at jointhenerdclan.com about some of the life stuff that has been going on for us.
Or maybe for everybody.
We can maybe we'll see.
Put it on every podcast.
We'll
so
see.
just be tuned, be warned
yeah,
that
be tuned.
You might be hit me. You might be getting a podcast from us with a little bit of a life update. But let's delve into the Potterverse, shall we?
Okay, let's do it.
So we are here, chapter 26, The Second Task. You're well outside the time limit, though, Harry. Did it take you ages to find us? No. I found you okay. Harry's feeling of stupidity was growing. Now he was out of the water, it seemed perfectly clear that Dumbledore's safety precautions wouldn't have permitted the death of a hostage just because their champion hadn't shown up. Why hadn't he just grabbed Ron and gone? He would have been first back. Cedric and Crumb hadn't wasted time worrying about anyone else. They hadn't taken the Mersong seriously. And I chose this quote because I was actually listening to this chapter with our little lass.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me, you know, it's usually our little lad. Our little lad is like deep into Harry Potter.
Oh,
I mean, he could
yeah.
kick any of our butts when it comes to Harry Potter trivia at this point. He's so knowledgeable of it. And our little lass, being six, you know, still enjoys the series. But when she does ask questions, it's pretty interesting. And so we're listening to this chapter and she said, Mom, why does Hogwarts put these students at risk, the Triwizard students and these kids, that they could actually die? Why would a school choose to do that?
Yeah, that's it's a really great question. And Mary, I would love to know if you have an answer to that.
I did have an answer for
that.
Okay,
and then let's hear it, girlfriend.
So I told her, I said, well, obviously, you know, they clarify that none of these four hostages, you know, the four friends that the merfolk were holding were actually going to drown and die. It was just something to hurry them up a bit. But in regards to the Triwizard Tournament participants themselves,
yeah,
they can be hurt. They can. One of them does die. You know, like things happen.
Hashtag spoilers.
Yeah. And so I told her, I said, one of the things that I want you to realize, Felicity, is that they haven't done this tournament for years because they did realize how dangerous it was for kids. And because of that, Dumbledore and the board made sure that there was an age cap. And so you're going to realize that a lot of the skill sets that are needed for these tasks are things that Victor Crumb and Cedric Diggory and Fleur Delacour figure out. You know, we don't have any evidence right now that, like, anyone told Cedric, hey, you need to use the bubble charm. But I said he probably learned the bubble charm from Flitwick in that year. You know, they made this age cutoff hoping and figuring that these kids would have enough skill set to be able to complete these tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we know that Karkaroff and Metamexine might be helping, but I kind of use Diggory as the barometer because nobody's necessarily helping him cheat per se. You know,
yeah.
Harry told him about the dragons, but Cedric was able to figure out how to open the egg, but also the bubble charm himself, as did Fleur, which makes me think that at their grade level, they learn those types of charms. So to me, it's less, they figure it out. Okay, we can't have every age do this. It can't be like the Hunger Games where you've got like, you know.
I volunteer for tribute.
You can't have like little, you know, 13-year-olds and then 17 and 18-year-olds. But they figured out, okay, with the tasks that we're going to have lined up, you know, what age should ideally, had they been paying attention in school and had they been trying their best, should they know a couple of different resources? Maybe they can't fully transfigure into a shark, but they've learned how to transfigure themselves a little bit, you know, things like that.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that was my two cents, is that in the past, yes, people have hurt, been dead, but that's why they tried to make an age
camp
this
year. Hurt. They woke up dead.
So that was my response to a six-year-old.
You ready to get into the rest of the chapter?
I sure am.
Let's do it. Don't go dying. I don't want you to wake up dead.
Before we do this, though, we do want to let you guys all know that as we go into the next month and as we go into the spring season, Blake and I are going to be very, very busy.
So busy.
We've got a lot of shows going on at the same time. The Potterverse will continue. We've already planned out the schedule. It will be weekly, so don't worry. You will be getting an episode of the Potterverse every single week. And now that we've had the Rona, hopefully we won't be getting it anytime soon over the next month or so.
Thank God we got COVID when we did.
But make sure you're following us in particular on Instagram and Facebook, as those are our most prevalent social medias that we're really on the most. Obviously, we have a website. And we want to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. If you're not a member there yet, please do. All right, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Quick recap. Of course, as I said, we are here in chapter 26, the second task. This starts off with Harry, Ron, and Hermione in charms class, learning like some banishing charms, and they're kind of just able to talk. It's a free-flowing class. Then they go to Care of Magical Creatures. Hagrid is back. He's sticking with the unicorn thing, so we're having some good moments there. Harry, all the while, is desperately trying to figure out, you know, like, what do I do? Oh my gosh, this is not going to be good. Spending loads of time in the library. At the very last minute, Dobby saves the day and gives him some gillyweed. He goes to the second task, obviously, with the mer people, and saves the day, and ends up getting a lot of points for his heroic nature.
What he does not get, if you're watching, is a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Oh, this is the reason why you have to watch us on the...
You don't need to watch me right now. If you're just listening, trust me, you're not missing much. This is COVID Mary is not the usual minute with Mary.
No. You need a minute with Mary. You need an hour with Mary at this moment.
I need a month with Mary.
All right, Marvin, so...
You said, okay. So
I got some stuff.
Yeah, because here's the scoop. Like... There's a lot of this chapter is quite large, and there's a lot of time in class. So we get, you know, the Hogwarts experience. But when it comes to plot, and this is one of the things that is tough with Goblet of Fire, it's a giant book. But when you're trying to get to, like, you know, the big, big tasks, there's a lot of Hogwarts magical filler, which I am here for. I am here for all those magical elements. But when it comes to Flitwick's class, where they learn some of these charms...
Yeah, like the revulsion charm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like...
To me, it's still showing you how elementary grade year four is.
Yeah.
You know, that Flitwick probably taught Cedric Diggory the bubble charm earlier that year. And yet these kids can't even flip-flop a pillow.
Right.
So to me, that's what I'm taking it as.
But the unique thing about... there is some unique stuff that comes out of the class. First, they're all talking with each other, so they're not really paying attention.
Yeah.
And the revulsion charm doesn't require... A vocal aspect that some charms do. Mm-hmm. It just happens with the motion, which mm-hmm. I think is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But also, some students are doing the charm on objects that are larger that they really shouldn't be able to do yet. So what does that say about them?
And like Neville.
Neville, yeah. Like
can't do a pillow, but he can do Flitwick.
Right. Like that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That he's able to do that kind of... And like, and the other part of it too, right? So, can you do an accio on a person?
Ooh.
Right? Because if you can do a revulsion charm, can you do an accio?
That's a great question. I do not know. Is that one of your questions that you really wanted me to know?
Well, that's like a nerdy question that I have, right? But the fact is that since he was able to do the revulsion charm on Flitwick, can you do an accio on a person to bring them towards you? My gut tells me no, that it's only inanimate objects that you're able to do it.
Hmm. That's what the Daily Prophet is saying. It is an object commonly used with a noun, of course, a thing.
Yep.
And it is one of the oldest and most commonly known spells in the world of magic. Can you accio a person? It says, yes, you can, but not directly. Accio is known to work on inanimate objects. Yeah. While people, animals, and magical creatures may not be may be indirectly affected or moved by the charm, it cannot move people directly through the charm itself. So you could perform that charm on an object that an individual is holding or wearing.
Oh, okay.
That can, though, also be difficult because sometimes objects move at the speed of light. So, you know, say I were to say, like, accio Blake's shirt.
Yeah.
Possibly it could move you, but it could also like rip through you.
It could also kill me. So, yeah. Death by shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. So and
concur.
And at the same time, the author uses a really cool technique here in the beginning of Flitwick's class, where Ron is saying, "Oh, Snape is the one that I think put your." Maybe he's trying to kill you, or maybe he's trying to put your name in the goblet. And Hermione is the one that steps in and says, "Guys,
we've been over this.
Chill. It's
times.
Not Snape."
Mm-hmm.
I find that a fantastic intervention from the author, if it was intentional, which I'm sure that it was.
Yes.
Then that's great. If it's unintentional, it's even better, because Hermione is stepping in saying, "Stop worrying about Snape."
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, a direct message to us as readers, like, guys, this is not Snape.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is she also, she has that through a veil, right, the author?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have been so trained to distrust Snape that we're kind of dismissing Hermione at the same time.
Well, I think you get the happy medium with Harry's response, where he says, okay, yeah, sure. He's like protected us in, you know, Philosopher's Stone, and he tried to help us last year with the werewolf.
Right.
But he says, but I want to know what his first offense was. I want to know why he has a second chance. What was his first chance? And I think that that's a nice happy medium, because it's Harry's way of saying, yeah, I got it, but he still did something shady. And I'd love to know what that is.
Yeah, that's that, and I think that's a fair statement from Harry. Though it's not his business, but when has Harry ever worried about something being his business?
I mean, he's a Gryffindor.
He is a Gryffindor.
We're a bit nosy.
So I kind of want to skip ahead a little bit to Dobby. I like the fact that Dobby is included.
Yeah, because we had the Hagrid bit, but I don't think anything really comes of the Hagrid bit, aside from
like,
he's
so
now happy.
Yeah, he's happy, and he believes that Harry's able to do it. Whatever. So what? The Dobby thing.
It shows why Harry didn't ask him for advice. Like Harry could have asked for people's advice. Okay, yeah. Continue, Dobby.
The Dobby thing is interesting.
Okay.
And I will say that I liked the film's adaptation better.
Where was Neville?
It was Neville.
Okay.
Who was ostensibly given this information by Moody when they spoke to each other over a cup of tea after.
Agreed.
So, and that knowledge of gillyweed in herbology, since we have an understanding that Neville has a special inclination or talent for herbology, that makes sense to me. For Dobby, in this case, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
In that, yes, Mad-Eye Moody probably had this conversation in front of Dobby, and he intentionally had it in front of Dobby with whoever about all the information.
Okay, so Blake, once again, has not read this book, but yes. So Faux Moody, Barty Crouch Jr., does have a conversation with McGonagall about it, and Dobby overhears that.
Yeah,
so this,
like,
is how...
And I'm only going off of what, you know, the movie has told me so far, right? So you would imagine that Moody is the one that gives the information to Neville in the film. So I think naturally it's easy to expect that Moody is the one who gives the information to Dobby.
Mm-hmm.
What I am worried about, though, is that Dobby just kind of comes out of nowhere again, and has this information and gives it to Harry 10 minutes before, already has the gillyweed in hand. Like, it's everything is done, boom, on the way, see you later.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that to be a tad convenient and very writerly. Is that a fair criticism?
Hmm. I think I think I need to double check the timing of when Dobby would have heard this information. Maybe he just heard it that night.
Yeah. Yeah, but okay, even if it was that night, you would think that Dobby, given his relationship with Harry, would be...
Maybe it was just 10 minutes ago.
But there's no way.
I don't know. How could there be no way?
Since Barty Crouch, Faux Moody, is the one that has been guiding Harry throughout this whole thing.
Yes.
There's no chance that Faux Moody is allowing this to go that far without an answer.
Okay. I appreciate.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, I need to double check the timing, if it says the timing of when this conversation happened. Because I agree with you. If Dobby's been sitting on this gillyweed thing for a month... Like, what are we doing? And now, mind you, Dobby's not at all in the movie Goblet of Fire and the whole Winky thing and the whole house elf thing. So it would have been weird to just be like, oh, by the way, I'm working in Hogwarts and you're only going to see me once in this movie. It would have been really awkward. So I agree with you for cutting out the whole spew and house elf bit from Goblet of Fire. They did a really good job tying up loose ends, you know, giving Neville a little bit more something. So I agree with you. And I see what you're saying, how the timing of, in the movie, Faux Moody giving Neville the book, Neville having the time to read the book. He's even telling Harry about different fun facts, and Harry's mad at him, like, why are you telling me about this stuff? I'm so mad, you know? So,
and it happens in a natural conversation where he's like, well, listen, if you can find a way to get me to do the X, Y, and Z, he's like, well, I don't know, but I know about gillyweed.
And then he does, and it's not 10 minutes before.
Right.
And then Neville is able to give him the gillyweed. So I agree with you. I do like the pacing of the gillyweed factor in the movie a bit better. I will hopefully, I mean, we're going to find out if we're able to know the timeline of when the Faux Moody McGonagall, here are some ways the kids could survive underwater conversation happens. Yeah. But
and the reason why I bring it up is because it feels as though the Dobby thing is brought in by the author for a very writerly reason, which is I need to create tension. I need to create some kind of urgency here before the second task.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the searching of the answer is that tension, not Dobby being like, you got 10 minutes, here's gillyweed, put it in your mouth, go. I just find that very convenient, and I find it very sloppy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Fun fact about gillyweed, you can make a drink with it.
Really?
Professor McGonagall at the Three Broomsticks orders a drink, gilly water. And Romil Devane offers Harry a glass of gilly water that is actually spiked with the love potion. So, and not only is the gillyweed in Professor Snape's stores, but we're led to believe that possibly in Herbology, they might be growing some gillyweed there.
Yeah.
So just some fun gillyweed facts.
And
like,
as good as the adaptation is in the film for the gillyweed, I think the film really lets us down when it comes to Harry taking the gillyweed, but when he finally gets to the mer people.
Okay.
I think the movie really lets us down with the mer people. But before we do that, I do want to say the writing for when Harry does take the gillyweed and he jumps into the water and he feels the oxygen in his blood and it's cooling and soothing and what a great piece of writing.
That whole bit, even just from him walking into the water and, you know, saying to himself, I feel so foolish. Everyone's looking at me and it's getting cold and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is so awkward. And then all of a sudden, like you said, the how he feels cool but not cold and how fast he's able to swim. Like, you get that kind of from the movie, but it was very descriptive, where I enjoyed this description a lot.
Yeah, I wish we got something of the feeling from Harry.
I think you do as best as they can. You know, he finds his webbing. He even, his excitement of how cool this is that little, like, flip in the water,
That's
I think.
That's true, yeah, good point.
So I think they did the best they could.
I would.
Without him having an inner monologue, like, this is so cool.
Yeah, that's.
I love magic.
Yeah. Good point. But the mer people, I think, in the film are characterized as just like nothing. And
visually?
No, visually.
Because I think visually they did a really good job describing.
No, but what I mean is, like, in the book, there is a society.
Yes.
There are paintings. There are, it feels like there are songs.
They have pet Grindylows.
Yeah, there are, there's language. Whereas in the film, there's none of that. There's no characterization. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that the Merpeople are that this seems like a big deal. The fact that the Triwizard Tournament is happening, mm-hmm. and there's almost like a ceremony to it all. Whereas in the film, it's just like we have these spears and you know, like
it's a time thing. So once again, this is part of the magical world. You know, like they didn't have the unicorns and all these charms classes, and you don't get to explore the world of the Merpeople in that movie. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Merpeople will be explored in the next Fantastic Beasts.
Maybe.
Because I agree with you. They're pretty cool.
And but I don't think it takes that much more time. It almost reminds me, if you will, of, you know, the Gungans in episode one of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, can you establish that there's a, hold on, let me just finish. I know that is a bad word.
That was like a swear word.
Fine.
You know, and maybe Shame. That's
I'll
why.
I'll take it.
Maybe that's why. Maybe because the Gungans kind of came out around the same time. No.
But I'll,
years later, this came out. So maybe they were worried they were going to look like Gungans.
Well, there was a sense of a society established in the Gungan world,
correct.
Right? Okay, great. And that society was established by these big establishing shots as Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn and, you know, Jar Jar are in this little mm-hmm. spacecraft, sea craft going down. And, like, you can tell that there's a world there. Now, when they get to Boss Nass and doing the whole thing and all that other crap, yeah, no, that's stupid. But you can establish a society in a few establishing shots. You can show that there is, you know, some kind of ceremony type celebration.
Like how they established the tents and the camping in the
absolutely
World Cup. Okay.
Yeah. I think you can do that. So the characterization of the Merpeople is hard for me to accept in the film because the book does a much better job. And I don't think it's that hard to create that same feeling, not necessarily with all the detail. But, like, you can have a merperson talk, right? You can say, we don't help. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think that's a fair that's a fair thing to do when Harry's asking to borrow the spear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say I love the dichotomy, or at least the contrast, between what the mermaid looks like.
Yes.
In the dream that mm-hmm. Harry has and mm-hmm. how she's kind of teasing him.
Mm-hmm.
But what the reality of the mermaid is or mm-hmm. the merperson is, what a great contrast between the two.
Yeah.
And how it...
This isn't Peter Pan mermaids.
No, this is not. This is not Ariel. And what we get in the dream and in the glass window, that's Ariel. I really loved that difference in how the author sets you up to believe one thing and then does a completely other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about the characterization of the merpeople in the film as it relates, in light of what we see in the book?
Dramatically less. And, you know, I think that for people who are fans of the Potterverse, Goblet of Fire is easily one of your top books because of the universe that is expanded. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that you won't like the movie, but once again, it comes down to timing. So I appreciate what you're saying, how like it wouldn't have taken but 15 seconds to maybe do some shots of their land and their village. But when you're looking at a film, every single thing needs to count.
Sure, absolutely.
And, you know, we needed to have that. I think we needed to have the heightened mystery because Harry swims for a long time in this, you know, so
it takes up half of his time.
Yeah. So, you know, I think for us to be with Harry rather than like, wow, I love magic. Like, look how cute. They've got a little pit Grindylo. Like,
yeah.
I think that they wanted it to be dehumanized to make it scary. We hadn't had the dragon for a while, and we're not necessarily having the threat of Lord Voldemort. Like, you think about Chamber of Secrets. Like, every time you get cozy, you freaking hear the basilisk say something.
Good
so
point.
We needed to kind of be on edge a little bit, because maybe too, as viewers, we'd be looking and be saying, they're not going to actually drown Ron. You know, that's not actually going to happen. So I think it was okay, but I do love how often he tries to talk and how they can't understand him. And it's just bubbles and his sheer frustration. And I think it's quite interesting, you know, when he whips out his wand and that changes the game for them.
Yep. That's what she said.
And so, oh my gosh, this is a family friendly show. And this is yet again another example of the layering that we have where wizards with their wands do seem to have a higher level of authority and also fear. They can bring about a little bit more power, I guess, what I'm going to say, against other magical creatures. And so I just thought that that was very interesting in the book, to be able to see, like, he can't speak because his things just keep going in bubbles, and he does his 3-2-1, and the wand itself is able to kind of scare the merfolk into snapping out of it.
Yeah, and I another bit that I liked too, that is that Harry is doing the Relashio charm,
and the bubble just keeps
and the bubbles are in, like, he's shooting hot steaming bubbles out of his wand, like, and he's just shooting it everywhere.
Yep.
Like, who cares if other contestants are around? Who cares what it just you're gonna get smoked by this boiling hot water.
Like, and yet he finds a sharp rock, takes care of business. The other thing that scared me was the description of when Crumb comes in with his shark face and he's just gnawing ever so like crazily, and Harry's thinking he's gonna bite one of Hermione's legs off.
Yeah, right.
So he has to hand him his little sharp tool. So it was, the other thing that's different is in the movie, Harry doesn't know that he has to rescue Ron. It's not until he sees him.
Yeah.
So it adds that climax of, it adds to that fear. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Where here in the book, he at least knows what he's looking for.
And there's another great bit of subversion, I think, in this chapter as well. When Harry's looking at the seaweed that's tied up in a knot, it's holding Ron and all the others.
The hostages.
The hostages. He thinks, oh my gosh, only if I had the knife from Sirius that I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great subversion, because normally when it you know, you talk Chekhov's gun, right? When the gun is introduced in the first act, you can be better damn sure that it's going to be going off in the third act.
Mm-hmm.
And the author sets you up with this knife that Harry gets from Sirius, and then nothing comes of it. Like, he thinks, I should have brought this. Mm-hmm. I love that the author does that to you, and she takes that trope and says, nah, we're doing whatever we want to do with it.
Yeah.
Like, you could make an argument that she should have had Harry have the knife, but I like that she doesn't.
Yeah.
Because it's just too obvious.
Sirius is mentioned in this chapter.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the note comes in with the owl and Harry's pretty disappointed because all it says is, when's your next Hogsmeade trip?
Right.
So Harry, of course, writes back about that. But it is just nice to continue to have the little Sirius drops.
All right, so I got to talk about the hostages here, and this, I think, is where I have the most problem with this chapter.
You and our daughter.
No, I mean,
okay.
I like the fact that there is a little bit of urgency in that we're not 100% clear as readers that, you know, until later on in the chapter that, you know, these people could die. I mean, they're saying, like, you have an hour, and or this, whatever it is you want, it turns to dust or whatever it is. Then, like, could there be an argument, like, are they lying? No, because they're saying that if you don't rescue these people, your chances of winning the Triwizard Tournament are gone, right? So
yeah,
if you squint at it, they're still telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my trouble is with the hostages themselves. Well, first, I think the narrative, this is the first time that the narrative gets in the way of itself. Because the characters themselves, like, for example, Crumb, the person that he loves most is Hermione.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you met this chick like a month ago. Yeah, you took her to the dance, but like, you don't got a best friend in Durmstrang. Like, come on, right? And then hold on, let me finish.
Okay.
If I squint at it, I can make an excuse for Cho Chang because,
I mean, she's Cho Chang. She's the it girl.
She is the it girl, right? And for what the heck's his name?
Cedric,
thank you. It's the COVID. Come on.
Okay. It does actually affect your brain.
For Cedric, COVID like, fun. Okay, new love. She's the it girl. But he's a Hufflepuff. So are you going to tell me that a Hufflepuff doesn't have a best friend in his own house?
Okay. When do you want me to start to answer? Because you're going down the list. So I'm going to let you keep going down the list.
Well, the reason why I'm saying all of this is because I think the narrative gets in the way of itself to give Harry urgency and not necessarily the other character's urgency, right? The author is putting Harry in a place where he has to make a choice between Hermione and Ron and Cho Chang. And then the other one is the sister, right? So it's this 8-year-old little girl, however old she is, from Floor, right? So like, who do you choose? Do you take all of them? Do you play on that Gryffindor? And that's why I'm saying the narrative gets in the way of the story because the author is trying to make this urgent for Harry and not the other characters.
Okay, so I've got a little insight for you.
Okay.
Okay, so Harry, obviously it would be Ron, right? Well, you're not questioning that?
Well, I'm questioning that too because that means he values Ron over Hermione.
Yes, and he does.
But does he?
Okay, yes. It's his bestie, and they spend every single moment together, and they had a fight. So what I'm thinking is that the heads of houses and the heads of the school were tasked with, who does this person care about? And you know McGonagall and Dumbledore are all up in the kid drama, and they were like, Harry and Ron aren't getting along. Oh my gosh, they made up. And then who did Harry spend all of the time with at the Yule Ball? Ron.
Yeah.
Okay. Who did Victor spend all the time at the Yule Ball with?
Hermione.
And who did Cedric spend the entire time with at the Yule Ball? Cho.
Yeah.
So when you see the judges who are at the Yule Ball, this is the only time they get to see like the whole student body together. They see who do these people, when they have the entire school to choose from, who do they choose to spend their time with? These people. So it totally makes sense to me that they would choose Ron for Harry. 100%. Okay. Yes. Could they have substituted Hermione? Easy switch. But once you added Hermione to the Victor Crumb, they were like, bada bing, bada boom, got two birds, one stone. Why did they choose Hermione for Victor Crumb? And why did they choose Cho Chang for Cedric? Cedric is 17 years old and Victor Crumb is 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Those, my friends, are the most horny years of a man's life. Okay. And it's generally the years that people start to do a little. So that being said, put yourselves back, or maybe if you're currently at that age, or maybe you're not even at that age. So you just hold on tight, Spider Monkey. But put yourselves back to 17 and 18 years old when people are starting, you know, and you find your first love. Because I bet you Cedric already dropped the L-bomb on Cho. Cedric's that kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay? You know he's dropping L-bombs left and right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
The first person you are in love with, would you say you would have done anything for them? Like your high school love where it was, okay, so you had drama. Okay. Let's not talk about you. Normal people. Okay. Normal people, when they've got their first big love, think about all these movies. Think about The Notebook. Think about all these like grand young love movies, and then add in 17, 8-year-old lust. Yes, that is who they care the most about in this world. Then we get Victor Crumb with Hermione. Victor Crumb, bless his heart, I don't think he has a lot of friends. Okay, we don't see him having a lot of friends. He feels really awkward because he's famous. I would actually say he doesn't have friends, and Hermione is the only person who looks at him eye to eye. We don't know that he has any siblings. We don't have anything like that. He doesn't have a Ron, so it makes sense to me. Once again, 18-year-old, this is the only person he's connected with, and it's who he hangs out with the entire time at the Yule Ball. Then we come into the fact, though, why didn't Fleur Delacour have Roger Davies? Her date, her Ravenclaw date.
Well, I was just going to say the one flaw in your argument is Fleur.
Wow, my friend, 17-year-old girls aren't built like 17-year-old boys. And let's be real, Fleur Delacour does not really care about Roger Davies when she has a younger sibling. That's who she cares the most about. Fleur is very, very into herself.
Sure.
Okay. So all she does is complain. She puts Roger Davies down and she has a sister. So it's easy. Obviously,
here's another question too, and this is like a more of a mechanical question.
Why is an 8-year-old there?
Why is an 8-year-old there?
Preach.
But what Okay, and let's just say all things being
equal. Or did they just like scoop the 8-year-old up? Like, did she not actually come to Hogwarts for the year, unlike in the movie? Like, did they just like bippity-boppity-boo her home?
That would be a fair thing.
Because they could say like, well, who does Fleur care about? And they'll say, like, no one. Fleur just cares about Fleur. And like, we're in trouble. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, put a mirror on a piece of seaweed? That's what she'd care about saving. And then they had to go and ask Fleur's parents, like, can we please take your 8-year-old? Because honestly, Fleur doesn't care about anybody until she meets the Weasleys. And then, you know, it's a different situation.
Does that make
you feel a little bit better?
There's one possibility that, yes, that they snatched her sister from her house in the middle of the night, broke the door down, and pulled an old school
put her
on
right
her.
Back.
Yeah.
If she's not dead.
Dumbledore and Professor McGonagall showed up in a white van and black ski masks.
And they just left a little note like they did when they dropped off Harry.
BRB.
With an owl. P.S. The owl bites.
So, you know, or the other option is that Beauxbatons starts their schooling earlier. So
yeah, maybe they've got a K-12 program.
That's what I'm getting at,
yeah,
right?
So I'm
maybe
here for it.
Maybe the sister is there for a good reason.
But they say, I'm pretty sure they said that they only brought the kids who were age appropriate to Hogwarts. They didn't bring the whole school.
Right.
I thought they said they only brought like a handful of the age appropriate candidates who actually would have wanted to do the Triwizard Tournament.
Good point. So maybe
I think the bippity boppity booter sister.
No, they showed up in a white van and with black ski masks, and they broke the door down and they left the note.
Just said Hagrid.
Yeah.
Hagrid, we need you to go pick up something. Remember what you did on the island to the Dursleys?
Yeah.
Dry up your old prune.
Just do that again.
Yeah.
Just don't let anybody know it's you.
Just say oui. Un, deux, trois.
So I...
Dress like Emily in Paris. No one will notice. Bonsoir.
You just see Hagrid walking around in red
beret.
Bottom shoes.
Bonjour.
Oh, man.
Okay, so that's my opinion on the Victor Crumb, Cedric Diggory bit.
I think it's all fair, but I still think that is a tad...
Like, I'll tell you this. I didn't spend Christmas with my family. I spent it with my boyfriend. And Christmas is a big deal to me.
Yeah, but you can't tell me that as a Hufflepuff, Cedric doesn't have a best friend. Like, you tell me that JFF...
No, he definitely has a best friend, but if it comes to best friend versus my girlfriend, who I've probably, like, got to second base with by this point, because he dropped the L-bomb, and let's be real, Cedric Diggory.
I don't know. I think there are some flaws in that argument.
I think you need to go back to 17-year-old self and see what you would have chosen.
To be honest, I would have chosen my best friends over my girlfriend.
At 17?
At 17.
Your girlfriend, once again,
my girlfriend
was a floozy.
She
was a floozy.
But she was banana land.
Yeah.
So
you probably would have been like, Merfolk, you can keep her.
Yeah, just to make my life easier.
Okay, how about me?
Well, I'm going to choose you, obviously.
Okay, so I'm just saying that to normal people who don't have floozy girlfriends, who also themselves aren't like promiscuous as you were in your youth.
Yeah, but the second I met you, I knew we were going to get married.
That's how Cedric felt about Cho. Okay? That is how Cedric felt about Cho. Thank you. Point made. Move on.
So, I think there are some inefficiencies in the writing here, and I also think...
I don't.
But it's fair.
Aside from the sister. The sister is where I get hung up. Other than that, I totally believe a 17-year-old boy...
is an issue. Because that kind of throws a wrench into all of your plans. But whatevs. We'll whistle past that graveyard. I like how Harry, you know, does the Gryffindor thing, and he struggles with the idea of bringing up other people, and I want to rescue the others. And I like how also...
I would have had the same problem.
Of course you would have. I like how Cedric and Crumb just don't even like bother. They're like, yeah, right, guy. Like, no chance are we gonna rescue other people. Though I kind of struggle a tad with the fact that Cedric wouldn't try to rescue other people at all. Just because he is such a Hufflepuff and wee. Like...
Part of me thinks that Cedric knows they won't actually die. Once again, I think it's a maturity thing.
And to provide a counter argument to my troubles, I just thought about this. Cedric was the one that was so careful with staying within the rules, but bending them a tad by letting Harry know about the egg. Mm-hmm. So, like, is Cedric is he intentionally not trying to save other people because he's bound by the rules that he's so carefully been trying to follow? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he willingly accepted the answer from Harry.
So he says, so Cedric comes on up. And Harry looked up and saw Cedric swimming toward them. There was an enormous bubble around his head, which made his features look oddly wide and stretched. Got lost, he mouthed, looking panic-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we're really short on time. We're even late at this point. Fleur and Crumb are coming now.
Yeah.
So why doesn't Cedric try to save them all? Because he figures every single one of the champions is going to be here in a second. And we're late.
Good point.
I just saw them. Like, to me, that's him saying they're coming. We're going to be okay. We don't need to save them all because they're all going to be saved.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Blake.
One more thing that stands out to me in this chapter is Percy. Everyone ranks on Percy, and trust me, deservedly so. That kid's a clown. But the way that he expresses his urgency and, like, love for Ron in this moment where he isn't clear. Like, one of the things that I recognized as I was reading this, McGonagall is the one who tells Hermione and Ron, hey, come to my office.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's the one who snatches them.
But she tells them.
No, I know. But still, like, she's – in the movie, they don't show that at all, which is it's an interesting differentiation, right? But and I'm sure that they're not going to volunteer for this thing if they know that they're going to croak, right? Like, so they
correct.
They have an understanding, like –
But you don't think Percy got that sticky note that don't worry that we won't actually kill them.
Right.
Yeah, I think that McGonagall and Dumbledore did that on purpose to not tell Percy.
Sure.
You know?
Well, not tell anybody.
Let's just mess with them. No, I mean, all the judges know none of the kids are going to die.
The judges, yeah, sure. But what the rest of the population?
Yeah, like, let's make this really suspenseful.
So I like that Percy finally does something.
Just like
something.
How we all feel when you watch a show with your favorite character and you're like, will he die? And you say, no, they just renewed for two more seasons.
Yeah, we know
he
ain't going to
die.
Work. Yeah, right.
But I'm still nervous.
Like, I just started that show, The Bodyguard. Oh, not The Bodyguard, but Bodyguard with Rob Stark. And there's this scene in the beginning of it that starts off, and, like, there's this suicide bomber that he kind of, like,
be careful,
runs into.
Family friendly.
Mm-hmm. Well, no.
I know.
And I know the bomb ain't going to go off because we got the rest of the series to go through.
Yes.
So it is tension filled, but it's not, like, at risk filled.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I do love that Percy finally does something that you can relate to as a human.
Percy gets better in the books. It gets worse and then it gets better. He has his moments. Okay. We all have those people in our lives.
Yeah.
That were like, oh, but you're not, like, really bad.
Yep.
Percy has a heart.
Harry buys Dobby some more socks.
Well, he decides he's going to buy him enough socks for one day every year. Because Lord knows, Harry Potter's loaded.
He's got all the money.
No.
Anything else you want to talk about this chapter, my darling?
That's really it. The next task is going to take place June 24th. Which blows my mind that the kids are still in school. So if you do live in the UK, I'd love to know, when is your last day of school, generally? Our last day of school is traditionally around June 20th here in Rhode Island. I know it's different in different states. Southern states often get out a lot earlier. But when we have snow days or where we have delays like that, it will go even further than that. So I'd just be interested to know, because I thought that was quite late.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the kids stay in school a little longer or if it's just the second to last day. I mean, Lord knows Cedric dies and they all need to go home. Please come pick up your child early. School is being dismissed a day early.
We do have to get going here. But we did promise that Mary would do a different perspective for this episode.
I feel like we just
did, yes.
I feel like we just did by doing the whole, like, Hagrid going to France to go steal
good
Gabrielle.
Point. All right, fair enough. There you go. You got your different perspective. Hagrid going to France to steal Gabrielle.
Am I right?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Yeah. Okay, so I know I also promised that we were going to get to the listener feedback for this episode. We'll do one. We'll do one. This one comes from Jay. Oh, actually, you know what? Hold on.
Miles here.
This one comes from Jake. Jake says, I'm a proud Gryffindor, and I'm emailing to let you know that I love the Potterverse podcast.
Thanks, Jake.
And that it is the best Harry Potter podcast that I've ever listened to.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks, Jake. I appreciate that.
Jake, that's so sweet.
That. My question to you, though, is who do you think would play Harry if the films were made now? I think Tom Holland would do a great job.
Hmm.
See, now this is a good question. Because when are we, for what age are we casting Harry Potter?
Good question.
Right? Are we casting Harry Potter for young buck Harry Potter or for Deathly Hallows Harry Potter? Right? Or
like
Order of the Phoenix. You know, are we doing an 11-year-old or are we doing the 18-year-old?
How about a person, but you can just Benjamin Button him to whatever age he needed to be?
Oh, okay. I got you. That's a good question. If I could Benjamin Button anybody to the age that I want them to be. My first thought was Henry Cavill, but no, he's too...
He's too dreamy.
I'm going to go with, you know what? I'm going to go with Tobey Maguire.
He's my boy.
He's your boy.
He is.
How about you? What do you
got? I mean, I'm down for a Tobey Maguire.
I think Tom Holland would be good. I like Tom, because I think he can pull off the nerdiness. I think he can pull off the athleticism that's needed to be Harry Potter. He can pull off the dorkiness, but also the anger.
Like, I would actually love a Harrietta Potter. I would love to flip genders.
Yeah, but you have to work within the construct of...
I'm just saying, if I could, I would. Flip everyone. Mix it all up. Make it like a Rubik's Cube.
All right, if I had to choose a Harrietta Potter, you know who I would choose?
No.
Liv Tyler.
Cute.
I just thought about that. I think Liv Tyler is...
She might just be a little too pretty.
That's a good point.
I know.
That's a good point. Maybe Maggie Gyllenhaal. I'm not saying she's ugly, but she's no Liv Tyler.
Okay, I'm down.
Maggie Gyllenhaal would be good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything? We have a ton of listener questions.
You know what we're
going to
do? We're actually just going to do a listener feedback episode after this one so we can catch up. So that's what we're going to do.
I mean, I don't think we should do that.
So we have a ton.
Well, I know.
What's a ton? Over five?
Well, I mean, we have five. We have four or five listed, but I just took one off. So,
okay.
We'll do it at the next chapter. Yeah, we'll do it at the next chapter. Just because we have a little bit of a time
crunch. Which will come out
next
week, I promise.
Right now, so,
make sure you're on our texting alerts. You're going to text, if you're in the U.S., text the phone number 81010, and in the message field, the at symbol, at Elderwand. No spaces, nothing like that, just at Elderwand. You're going to get our complimentary texting, and you will get a text letting you know the date and time that the podcast is being released, so you can join in the live premiere discussion, or you can just make sure to keep an eye on your podcast app.
All right, Marvin, you ready to close this bad boy out?
I sure am.
Let's do it.
We want to thank you all so incredibly much for those of you who are patrons at jointhenerdclan.com. You truly have made a significant difference in Blake and my life over the several years, but in particular this past year. And we also want to thank you all, whether you're patrons or not, for your patience as we have been going through a couple of different health issues over these past several months. And it has made us have to adjust our frequency, but we are back and we are better than ever. So thank you. Well, I'm not better than ever, but we're back.
I'll
be getting better.
Mary's on the road.
I'm on the long road. Yeah. But thank you all so incredibly much, and please stay tuned to make sure you're following us on social media, as we do have a lot coming up this
spring. So look up Mary and Blake on all the platforms, whether it's YouTube or Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's all there. We're ready to go. We're back in the Potterverse, man. I'm happy. Harry is a happy place.
Agreed.
So I can take that.
On that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.